It is now.
It's starting now. Well, thanks for having us. So, I met Gina. I don't know if she told you this before, but it's funny. She showed me this Bible. I forgot about it. I gave it to her in 1980. And then I have a similar. It's a Ryrie Study Bible, which probably the staff and Kim here would not like a Ryrie Study Bible, but they... I have one in it that notes that we started dating in 1979.
Sure, he didn't put the picture in there. I did. But he did write this to me.
Yeah. I was saying, did I put the picture in there? Really bad if we broke up. She'd have to rip that out of the Bible. So, yeah, we met. We grew up actually going to Torrance First Baptist, which is over, I think you guys used to meet over that way. And... We got to know her in junior high, going to church functions. And then, I won't tell you everything, but basically I asked her out on a favor to her brother. Because her brother and I, her younger brother, were best friends. And we went out on a date. We went to a dance, a sweetheart's dance. And from there we started dating. So we dated 10 years before we got engaged, right? So jump in. We're going to do this in a conversational format today, so we're going to kind of bounce off each other. So 10 years, and so then we got married in June 25th, 1988. So, and then God's blessed us with three boys, which was kind of alluded to, and blessed us with three boys specifically with autism. And so now we're 25 and a half years into our relationship, plus 10 years dating, right? And then we knew each other before that. So we've got a long history, but really, I think the sweetness about it is that we're really best friends. And so when we think back, when we first started coming to Lighthouse, what really hit me was that we're now one of the older couples in the church. We've never had that anywhere we've gone, so it's kind of weird. So anyways, we're gonna embrace it and enjoy it. So what we're going to do, we sat down and we started praying about what we would talk about. We thought about looking back at 25 years of marriage. And to give a little context here, when we were growing up, I was a pastor in ministry. So I went to the master's seminary. I came out and I was a singles pastor in Long Beach, California. And I had a lot of guys that were in my wedding and guys I knew in the ministry that we were real close. And as we kind of reflected back, we realized that a lot of the guys that were in my wedding, a couple of them are divorced now. A lot of guys I knew in seminary are divorced. A lot of the families and couples that we were associating with and our kids were playing with when they were like the ages of your kids, we went back and several of them are divorced. And so we thought we would go back instead of me getting up here and doing some kind of a message. We started to write down our thoughts about some of the things that God has impressed upon us over the years just about our relationship and share more of a testimony than anything else and not sit here and preach to you about what Scripture says, but more of the things that have really meant, that have been sweet to us in our 25 years of marriage. So, am I on the right track?
Yeah, and what we'll be doing is dialoguing. So, when Greg brings up one concept, I'll just jump in and... politely interrupt him and give my little 2 cents. But we also wanted you to have the freedom, too. If that triggered something and you had a question and you want to ask it right away, please feel free to. Or if you don't, wait till later and we'll answer your questions later.
Okay. How much time do we have? Just so I know.
So,
okay, great. So we have a list of 16 things, and we probably won't get through them all. So we'll either get through them all, or we'll get through one or two, and we'll take what we can
get. But these are the key things that have helped us in our 25 years.
Yeah. So first one was we talked about Christ being first in all things, which sounds probably very foundational and simple. But really, when we think about it, probably a life verse for us would be Philippians 3:13, where Paul says, "This one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind and pressing on toward what lies ahead, towards the prize, towards the goal." And really that passion or focus of Paul's is to be like Christ. And so in all things that we do...
That was 1 Corinthians 10:31.
Well, Philippians 3:13.
Oh,
and then I was going to say 1 Corinthians 10:31 is whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. So really everything that we do in our relationship, we want it to be Christ-centered. So what we do in our homes, how we love each other, what we do with our children, the things we post in the home, what we our activities, we want Christ to be glorified in everything, and we want our life to be a reflection of who he is, right, in all that we do. Okay. Did you have any?
Well, I was just going to say, in light of that, it has been kind of our purpose in life. We've decided, you know, it's most important to always love God first, and then our spouse, and then our children. So when we think of it that way, then all those things come into play, and then it all makes sense as we go through all these principles of how to love our husband. And loving God first will automatically, you know, love our spouse. So.
And so number two we had is from, it says, I have love, husbands, love your wives, and wives, respect your husbands. So Ephesians 5:25 and verse 33. And in that, were you going to turn to that? I just don't know. I always like to read it unless I have it cold stone memorized so that I don't hatch it, God's word. But Ephesians 5 says in verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word. He goes on to elaborate more, and he gets down to verse 33 and says, however, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. So this principle of, which really stood out as we talked about it, love and respect, is that I need to be loving Gina like Christ loves the church, very sacrificially. And the things that we do in that for her is a big part of this is her respecting me. So as simple as that sounds, in business and the things that I do all the time, one of the things I've observed with guys that aren't Christians, so this is just kind of outside of the faith, is that I've seen guys, and I see it still, we were just telling Gina stories. Did I include names or I left them nameless? I think I included names. But, you know, where the husbands are not feeling appreciated and respected at home from their wives. And a lot of times as these guys, these executives are growing in their career, what they don't get at home, they get at work. So I've observed a lot where there'll be a young, cute secretary that respects him at work and gives him that due respect. And these guys work tremendous hours, you know, 60 plus hours at work. And if they're getting, you know, when they get home, like, how come you're late? You know, did you take the trash out? You know, kind of on them. And then they go to work and these people like, yes, sir, whatever you want. And they're getting that respect. A lot of times men will translate in a negative way that respect for they really love me, they care for me. And that's where I've seen a lot of relationships, even guys I know who are Christian men, have made choices where they've had affairs because they've interpreted this at work affection, what they're not getting at home, as love, and then they make the choice to leave their wives. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's a progressive thing. So the reason I emphasize from the husband standpoint the respect part is because Gina does that really, really well. I don't know how she does it so well. But I could have a really bad day, and I could call ahead. I'll say, hey, I'm on my way home. I'm coming from the airport. And I can kind of at least give her a gauge of how I'm doing, right? If it's been a rough trip or I'm really feeling beat up, she kind of can calibrate for when I come home, and the expectation she might put on me will be somewhat scaled back, or she might tell me she's had a really rough day, right? And I can step it up and love her in a way that when I come home, I'm going to say, hey, let me do all the dishes. Let me do this. Why don't you go out and have a coffee? Why don't you call a friend? So we can kind of play off each other, right? We have some sense of how each other's day's been. And so for me, really trying to be sacrificially loving to her and sensitive to her, but at the same time that she's always trying to, because I don't really, you tell me if I'm wrong, I really try not to talk to her much about work. I try to check that at the door because I've found when I come home and I've dumped on her about my day, it just takes her to the level of my emotion. Meaning that if I'm really discouraged, all she's going to do is magnify that discouragement, right? How bummed out I am. If it's something positive, great. But I try not to dump on her and tell her all the tough things. I just say, oh, it was a tough day, but how was your day? You know. And the way I deal with that is a lot of times I'll call friends in the business world, and I'll call them before I get home, and I'll kind of data dump on them and share my frustrations. But I don't want to bring those home in loving her and dump all that baggage on her, because when I was in ministry early on, I remember in the ministry, guys, women who are pastors' wives, the tough thing is back then that's when they still had pagers and answering machines at home. I'd come home and my answering machine would have, you know, 50 messages on it from single women, because I was a singles pastor, and it was like, oh my word, what's going on? And so I would share all my frustrations with her, and she started to develop kind of a resentment towards the ministry because of all the stuff I shared with her. So that was something that helped me know, give her a little bit of warning of how my day's been. It kind of helps her know how to gauge with me, and vice versa. She'll share with me. Generally, we don't both have terrible days. Usually one has a worse day than the other. And so we can kind of, each one can step it up at a certain level, right?
Greg was really good at that. That communication on the way home is really important, because they don't know, like, going back where you guys are at right now, they don't know that we're just done at the end of the day, right? All the diapers, all the play dates, the grocery shopping, cleaning, laundry, and all that, or whatever else has happened that day. So sometimes we're not at that place where we're like, oh, yay, you're home. You're like, you're home. Take over, you know. So that phone call is really helpful, because we can make a choice, ladies, at that moment, going, okay, was his day worse than mine? Do I need to love him more than I need to just vent? So he was really good at calling his friends on the way home so that he can share that with them. And we might need to do that with each other and talk to each other about all this stuff. I'm sure after years they get tired of hearing, I know you did 10 loads of laundry today. I know the baby spit up. I know there's feces in their bed. I know whatever the issues are, you know. But we can make a choice that moment to respect our husbands. And that, I know, is hard. I know sometimes you just have to go, take that deep breath, and Lord, please give me the grace and the words and the kindness to be able to love him first. Because right at that moment, we're not feeling it, right? We have to choose, though, to ask God to just intervene and help us do that so that we can respectfully love them when they walk in the door. And when they walk in the door, welcome them. Remember when you used to pursue them and they would say anything and you'd be like, oh, you're so funny. Oh, how cute that is. And do you do that anymore? Do you respect them that way that these other people in their workplaces do? We probably don't, so we should consciously be thinking of that in adoring them. And that brings that respect. And that once you practice those things, the feelings come back. I promise they do. They do. But you have to practice them, and they come back in that joy and that excitement. It's just there because God honors marriage, and if we work at that, he will bless you in that.
Yeah, we took this, I think it was Gary Chapman, was it? It was about knowing your love language, and that was something early on in our marriage that it allowed you, the big thing he talked about was when you love your spouse, you need to love them in a language that they feel loved, right? So it's not just, so it had five different ones. One was the two that stood out because they're ours. Mine was like quality time. I wanted quality time with Gina, and she wanted acts of service. So my tendency is to love her in my love language. So that would be like, spend time with me, spend time with me. And she would kind of be repelled because she's thinking about all the stuff she's got to do around the house, right?
So he's following me around the house while I'm cleaning.
Right.
And he's hanging out talking to me while I'm cleaning.
So and then she would be loving me, like, it would get frustrating to me because on a Saturday, she wouldn't advance notice me, like, this is what I got planned. This is the list of things I want us to do today. Saturday would come, and then I'd say, what are we doing today? Thinking we're going to spend time together. And she goes, well, I got this in the kitchen, and I got this fixed over here, and I want you to go. I'm like, whoa, where's this coming from? We didn't even have this. Well, it kind of blindsided me. So when we understood that, I knew if I was coming home, the best way I could love her, the way she felt loved in her marrow, was by me saying, what are the things you need me to do? Or if I walked in and saw that the dishes were all over the place, just kind of talking to her, but going and doing that stuff while I'm talking. Or a lot of this for your husbands, some of them may not know how to run the dishwasher or do laundry, right? I mean, I'm just guessing. So it would be good for them to learn how to do some of those things, take the initiative. Now, I know with Gina, she doesn't like me to wash some of her clothes because I'll ruin them. But the effort, I can wash the kids' clothes. Yeah. So
I don't care what happens to them.
Yeah, those, no big deal. Because we're almost the same size now, the boys, so we can fit in the same clothes. So, but it was real important to me to, that communicated to her how much that meant to her by me saying, let me do these things on the list, or maybe go to the store and get these things for you, things that she just didn't have time to do during the day. So then she knew, then when maybe later in the evening, I just wanted to sit and talk. And, you know, I'm not a big conversationalist, really. It's more like I just want to sit and touch her and caress her and things like that. I just like to be around her. So then she would do those things kind of uninterrupted, right? She's not thinking about all the things she's got to do that evening or tomorrow. She'd kind of give me her undivided attention. So for us, that really helped, having that understanding of the way I'm loving her and the way she's going to feel it and vice versa, right? And so that kind of continues to allow us to me love you and vice versa, and the respect aspect from Ephesians 5.
Have you all heard of that before, the five love languages, that study? Okay. If you haven't, it's something to really look into. They have them for your kids, too, to understand how your kids love as well as your spouse. But.
Right. I'm going to let you do this one, number three, because you were...
Number three, we have here... speak grace to your spouse. Have Greg read Proverbs 16:24. Proverbs 16 is a fabulous Proverbs for us moms.
Do you want it? What part
maybe
do you want?
I should read it.
You got it? Oh, you had your finger there. Okay, go ahead.
Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Let me start at verse 16, because this whole path, at verse 18. Because as us wives, when we talk about speaking grace to our husbands and respecting them, I just go back and I can see myself with my friends when we were in your guys' stage and my husband wasn't loving me in my love language, and I would just roll my eyes, or I would take a sigh, or passive-aggressive behavior, you know, slam a door, you know, all the things that are so not gracious, not realizing I was showing him disrespect and not showing him grace. So in your actual words and your body language, we need to speak grace to our husbands. So starting in verse 18, it says, pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before stumbling. It is better to be of a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. He who gives attention to the word shall find good, and blessed is he who trusts in the Lord. The wise in heart will be called discerning, and sweetness of speech increases persuasiveness. So sometimes, you know, we think we know more than our husbands and whatever is going around in the home, or sometimes we think, why are you doing that? Why don't you do this? And so all that comes out in our language. It comes out in our body language. But if we go back to really trusting the Lord and showing humility and showing that kind of grace, the Lord transforms us. And then they begin to be persuaded by our actions. And they see it as a sweetness. And that last verse, the first verse that I had read, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. We have that opportunity to do that for our husbands. We can be that sweetness to them. They can see us coming in the door, and they want to hear what we have to say. But we need to be trusting in the Lord, living that out, demonstrating it. But if we're talking to our girlfriends, God, my husband's so lame, he did this today, or he makes me so mad, or whatever those things we start to invest our thoughts and time on, that's going to be what they see. That is not grace. That is not sweet. And we will never be able to encourage and persuade them to the things of the Lord that God's impressing on our hearts. I find that a lot. God will share something with me, and I think this is exactly what my husband wants. I would like for him to do, because I could see how he'd be more effective for the kingdom. But I can't just go, Greg, you're doing this wrong, blah, 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 and this is why God's told me this, you know. And so instead, I pray for him, and then I demonstrate it and act it out. And before you know it, he's coming to me, Gina, God's just shared this with me. He's just put this on my heart. I don't know where it came from. I'm like, really?
Wow. It's true.
And I just...
And she won't say, well, that's what I was praying about, that God would show you. It's just like...
I just go, yay,
I know
Lord,
that everything
awesome.
I do in my life, it's because she's been praying for me. So, but it's interesting. And the other thing is, husbands tend to want to be Mr. Fix-Its. So when she's sharing with me a lot of times, it's like... You know, James chapter 1, you know, be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. So early on in our marriage, she would share something, and she didn't ask me, she didn't want to know really what I thought about it, but I just assumed she was sharing her feelings, and that I meant, well, you shouldn't feel that way, because, you know, if you just do this, you can fix that, I mean, why don't you go talk? And then she'd look at me like I was crushing her, and I would say, what did I do? I'm just trying to help. And all she wanted me to do was hear her out. She just wanted to share her heart. And so what we had to learn to do, because I'm just more black and white, is I needed her to tell me, I need your input on this, or I want to know your opinion on this. Then that was a trigger for me to, again, pause, but then say, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Versus me saying, well, just do this and do this and do this, because at work, that's the way it is for me. It's very... a very linear, someone comes in, you're on a time crunch, it's boom, boom, boom. Okay, you're not concerned about their feelings as much, just get on and move on with life. It's completely different in the husband-wife relationship, that I have to learn that hearing what she's actually saying and feeling, without 9 times out of 10 not saying anything, she just wants me to hear how her day went and how she's feeling. Is that
accurate? That's very accurate. Remembering that we are different. Women are different than men. You know, that whole men are from Mars, women are from Venus thing. But God has created us differently. And so when we are with our girlfriends and we open up and we start sharing, we're better listeners with our girlfriends. And we're like, yeah, we empathize with them. We understand. And that's what we do. So we can't expect them to respond like the women. You know, they're like, I want to take care of you, want to fix it, that's a problem, let's get it out of here. So if we ever do want to share with our husbands that way, we need to preface that and say, honey, I just need to share this with you. You don't have to fix me right now, but I want to connect with you. And once you say that, they're like, oh, okay. They're going to be silent. They're not going to say a thing. And then you can say, now you can say something. You know,
And the other thing is doing it at a... Some of you might be night owls and some of you might be morning people, right? So you got to gauge that too, because if I'm all of a sudden, early in our marriage, before I went into medical device sales, because now I used to be a night owl when I was in ministry. I'd wake up just in time to get to church at 9 o'clock and then I'd stay up till 2 in the morning. But when I went into medical sales, you know, I had to get up at 5 o'clock and be in the OR at 6:30. And now I'm dozing off at 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. And so it's knowing when is a good time. So we're both more calibrated now, right? We're a little more. But it used to be where she was the morning person, I was the night owl, and I would want to have these long conversations late at night. And she's just dozing off. And I would think, wow, what's the deal? You know, I mean, we had dinner, put the kids down, and just... totally clueless about all the stuff she'd went through for the day, and I wasn't gauging that. So you got to know where there's a good time to talk where you're both alert. So when you communicate gracefully, you know that you're not getting frustrated. Okay. All right. 4, husbands take the lead and get your family to church. Don't wait for your wife to do it. I guess that's kind of blunt, but I find that husbands tend to be the, quote, weenies in taking the lead on this in a lot of situations. Now, I find that particularly what we've observed, because we have special needs kids, in special needs families, which is a big part of our experience, The women tend to wear the pants. I mean, they take the lead. The guys are generally like upset that their kids didn't turn out the way they thought they would, and they sit around and whine and mope generally. Or they leave their wives. They divorce them because it's not what they signed up for. But if they're still in Christian families, this is just my observation, but then the wife is kind of stuck there feeling like they got to take the lead and take them to church. And so our observation was we saw a lot of moms coming to church as kind of the scouts for these families and taking the lead, urging the husbands to get involved with ministry and things like that. And so it's hard for me even to convey this because it's like I'm not saying go back and tell your husband, you know, be the leader, and you know. But at a real clear level, husbands have to be the leaders in this too. If someone is not going to go to church on a Sunday because of a sick kid, generally what we used to do a lot is say, you go, right? I would say, you go. And I think as we got more into our marriage and we assessed that more, Gina would say, no, you need to go. You need to go to church. Let me be home. And we were always gauging how spiritually renewed and refreshed we were. And we kind of played off on that. But the husband really needs to be the leader in that respect and assessing that. Engaging, having some calibration to being involved with church, but not over-involved where you're burning out your marriage. So this is where I'm also concerned about the level to which we tend to be. So this is my observation. When we first came to Lighthouse, you know, it's a little intimidating because everybody, the first sermon I heard from Kim was about, I remember, and I told him this, he could hear this on tape and he can't get mad at me, but it was related to it was like a grandparents' day or something. So it was something to the effect that you all want your kids to go to Harvard or go to an Ivy League school and, you know, education is God and this kind of a thing. And all I heard was that our family wasn't going to fit in, right? Because none of them, you know, we had autistic children and they weren't going to overachieve in that regard. And so I was a little concerned with that. But I just blanked on what I was going to say. It's terrible. It all went out. I apologize. Yeah, isn't that terrible? I was going somewhere with that. Thank you. It'll come back to me. But I guess just with on the education piece. But
I think with the communication part, what you heard from Pastor Kim, and in relation to how you communicate with your husbands, this is probably not what you're saying, but this is what I'm thinking. Communication is not what you say. It's what is heard. So that is not what Pastor Kim was saying, what Greg heard, but that's what he heard. And so our husbands, when we want to encourage them to come to church, we need to be cautious about what we're actually saying. We need to make sure that we're communicating. We want them to love God. We want them to be the leaders, not, we want you to be the leader. We want you to make sure you get our families to church every Sunday. It's your responsibility. Greg Huber told me the man is the leader of the house, you know. No. You know, it goes back to, again, we need to be praying for our husbands that God stirs in their hearts that they're the leaders of our family, you know, that God is directing them.
Okay, I got it. It came back. Was because we're have a sense of overachievement, I think, in the pressures from our parents and things. It's the big part of the parent is not to be over-involved with ministry, especially when you have younger kids. I would err, this is something we try to do, is err on protecting your family, spend time with your spouse, spend time with your kids, particularly at the ages they are with you, and err in not being as involved with ministry. So I might get some heat about that. But you only get one wife, one family. You don't want to mess it up. And it's better to pull back and protect your family than to overextend yourself in ministry. And that's what's real important on the part of the leadership of the husband to gauge that. When to step in, I would step in with Gina and say, you know what, you might be involved with too many groups. What do you think? We would have a conversation about it because I saw her getting sick or burned out and it was trying to maintain our relationship that we didn't get bitter and frustrated with ministry, that we would maintain that freshness in that heart, because the priority was our relationship with Christ, our relationship with each other, and making sure that our children were seeing that in our security in Christ. So just a caution. There's a season that you're going through with young little kids, and it's okay to kind of say no to things, and the husband should really take the lead on that. Thank you. I'm glad it came back. So, okay. Number five, date each other. Don't let these slip away. Commit to them as long as you're married. So I guess dating is really, you know, you do it a lot before you get married, right? And then even when you get before and when you're married and when the kids come, it gets a little challenging. Because then the reason, unless you got in-laws nearby or parents, then you're kind of like, well, can't really go out right now. And there is a legitimacy in that. But what we would always try to do is still commit to, like, dates twice a month, right? When I think it was two times a month. And so we would do something. And even if that was, like what we do now is we get a little trapped at home and we call it den dates. So our den is like right across the hall from the kitchen. But we'll intentionally say we're going to go in there and we're going to have a conversation, or we're going to have cheese and crackers and sit and chat if we can't get out because no one can watch our son. So we'll still intentionally.
And we tell our kids, too, that this is Mommy and Daddy's date night. So you guys need to have your room time, find a book, a puzzle, or whatever, and get them set up doing their things so that they knew that they couldn't interrupt us for 1 hour or whatever.
Right.
You know, and they would, but we would teach them, hey, go back. This is Mommy and Daddy's time. Don't forget. Go back. We'll call you. See the timer? They don't move.
Right.
It's not at zero yet. So.
So, yeah, Sunday night was a good example. We have this one sitter that comes, and Tate really likes her. But I came home all excited we were going to go out to dinner. And Gina goes, I got a call. I'm so sorry. Gabby can't come. It's like, Even Tate can't talk. But Tate was depressed because
he was
sitting at the front window waiting for Gabby to come because he thought she was coming. So like, he'd be sitting out in the dark till bedtime. He's just waiting for Gabby to come. But so we just had to call an audible and do something else. So we just kind of, I think we watched a movie and forgot what we watched, but we watched something that was funny. And we just made the best of it, and we still did it. We didn't just say, okay, no date. We improvised and did something else, right, to try to make it fun. And so, but it's really important because what it does is it says to her, it says to Gina, I still value you supremely, you know, that I want to make sure that we're connecting. And be, you know, don't always make it dinner and a movie. I think it's kind of the default. Be like, let's go to eat or let's go to the movie. Do something, just say something different. Like go for a walk down to the beach, go for a hike up on the bridle path, maybe go window shopping, something. Be creative, go downtown LA, which can be spooky, but just go down to downtown LA Live or something. And it doesn't have to always cost money. Yes?
Does it matter who leads the dates?
I don't think so. I would encourage the men to do it because I just think men tend to generally be lazy. I can accuse my own sex. So, but I think it's totally okay if you plan the date. And I would say to Gina, you know, I'm not putting this on you, but why don't you tell me the things you want to do, and maybe I'll still put it together. Sometimes she'll say, I'm going to plan the whole thing and surprise you. So
we used to alternate. He would plan one of the dates. I'd plan the other. If they're spontaneous like the other night, it's easier for me to do it because I know that the babysitter's not showing up. I run to the market, get something special, get something special for Tate so that we're all set up in our den to do our little thing. Or, you know, if you have more than one child, then you've got to find childcare. I mean, it's easier sometimes for us to figure out all those surprise kind of things because we have more details that we have to take care of. They will just go, we're going here. Well, what about them? You know? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it takes a little more work, right? If the husband is going to, like, plan an overnight, right? It's really sensitive because if you got a packer, how do you do that with saying, do I know I'm bringing everything? And if we're not bringing the kids, who's watching the kids? And do you really trust your husband to think about all the details for the kids? You know, it's like, you've got to almost like do a dry run, and or you have to say, we're going to make, this is going to be a catastrophe, so I'll know how to do it the next time.
That's why it's good to have friends with another couple, because then your husband can talk to your girlfriends.
Right.
And they can pack your bags for you.
Right. Right. So, does that answer your question? Okay. So, I think dates are really, really important because I've observed that they disappear in a lot of marriages, once, especially when kids come. And so, it's harder to do, but I think there's a day, like our kids now, two of our three boys are out of the house. There's a day when the kids leave, you know, and if you haven't continued to foster your relationship, I've also seen marriages where when the kids start going out, then the husband and wife don't really feel comfortable around each other anymore. They're kind of like, everything was so centered on the kids that they're kind of like, you know, I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble, see you, you know, and read a book without you, which is one of your friends, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. Number six, you cannot meet all the needs of your spouse. So this is just an observation, but I think when we first got married, one of the things we were very committed to was I had done a lot of premarital counseling, and a lot of couples thought, if I could just get married, all the problems in the world would go away. And then when they get together, you know, after about a year, they're like, you know, the guy couldn't wait to get away from, you know, to do something separate, and it was just... It's not that everything is completely satisfied. And by that I mean what we committed to do was still she maintained a core of friends that were encouraging to her. And you'll find when you get married that not every couple you know does, like she might be really good friends with somebody, but I may not particularly hit it off with her friend's husband, right? We're not going to be real tight. I mean, we're cordial, we might go out. But it's not like if she says, hey, let's go on a double date, it'd be more of an effort for me because I might not really gel with the guy. So what we tried to do is she could go out with girls and do something, and I'd stay home with the boys, or vice versa. I'd say, hey, I want to plan a little getaway with the guys. And we kind of back and forth it, right? And so also the activities that we did, she, like even today, she really enjoys going to the gym. I'm a gymophobe. I don't like gyms. So she really, that's her daily thing. She loves to go to the gym and exercise. She's got a core of friends in the gym that are mostly unbelievers, but she's shared the gospel and women have come to Christ through that relationship. That she really likes that. And I don't. You know, I go running. I tend to go running. I like exercising and jogging and doing marathons. So I do that on my own. And it's more of a... I'll do that, and then Saturday morning we have a group of people here from Lighthouse that run together. But I'll have other activities. I like to go shoot guns. I have a buddy I shoot guns with. She, you know, she kind of likes guns, but she doesn't like to go do it that much, right? So she just does it for home defense. But it's keeping, realizing that it's okay for each of us to pursue other activities. But we're very transparent with each other. It's not like I'm doing something secretive or she is outside of that. But it's respecting the other person to realize there's things they want to do and that they like to do that you wouldn't want to do anyways. And that understanding that I can't meet all those needs. It's okay if she's talking to another woman and sharing her hurts and feelings and being encouraged by them. And I think early in the marriage you think, well, guy, why couldn't you tell me that, you know? Probably because early on I wasn't listening and I was trying to fix everything, right? So it's okay. You know, having that security of knowing that she needs to be encouraged by other women. She also knows that I need to talk to other guys. But it's not like I'm going to a bar and drinking and, you know what I mean? It's not like I'm off doing things.
And I think that's the thing is the other people that are meeting his needs are other men. And
right.
The other people meeting my needs
that's
are other
good,
women.
Good point.
So that's first and foremost because
right.
That could get dangerous if you start...
Yeah.
Being friends with the opposite sex.
Right.
But what's so amazing now after 25 years is that these principles that we practiced when we first got married, like that one in particular, now that we're 25 years older, we have newer issues that we go through, conflicts and struggles that we have. If he did not develop those friends that he has for the last 20-something years, he would not have people that he could trust to go to talk to about these issues. And that's really difficult for men to just open up, you know, with other guys. They just generally just like to play. They don't really like to talk. But if they will do that and start making those habits now, and they'll only do that if we encourage them. If we just say, oh, you're going to go out again, you're going to go play ball, you know, it's like, no, go, have fun, because they'll develop relationships. They can have godly friends that they can go to when things are really hard. Like when Greg and I do have conflict, and we'll say, you know what, we're not seeing eye to eye on this. Why don't you go talk to somebody outside, your friends, and Jeannie, you go talk to yours, and then we come back together and see, because you know there's his story, your story, then there's the truth, right? So once we go to other people and come back together, it brings more clarity, and restores what might have been broken.
And there's times we're talking, this is even where we're not connecting, we're not communicating, and then I'll say, maybe you can go talk to so-and-so and get some insight, because I don't understand. And she'll say the same thing, maybe you should go talk to so-and-so and get some feedback, and then we come back together, and then we kind of discuss.
And that's really helpful. So I really encourage you to encourage your husbands, because I know most of my girlfriends, their husbands don't have good guy friends that they go to and can just, you know, share their heart. So encourage them to play, to go do basketball, volleyball, whatever they do, golf, and then they'll develop those relationships to do that.
To open up, yeah. Seven is, we called it couch time, but now I can put couch time / FaceTime for a secure family. So this principle we learned when we were starting some parenting classes. And basically what it is that when I would come home or I'd be on a business trip, the idea was every time I would come home, the first 10 to 15 minutes would always be dedicated to us. It wouldn't be when you come in the door, where are the kids? Kiss the boys, play with the dog, and then she gets the last kiss. It was, you know, push the kids away, kick the dog, go to her. And it was letting her know, hey, I love you. Then, you know, pat the dog on the head and pat the kids on the head.
But it was also teaching the children that daddy loves mommy first.
Right. And that's what we would say a lot of times. I said, look, you know, I would kiss her, look, mommy, because our kids didn't talk. But look, you know, everybody look, daddy loves mommy. Okay, yeah. But then we would go, and then we would, after dinner, then we would sit down, an area would be the couch, or we'd sit outside, and we would just talk for 10 or 15 minutes. And when the kids are young, of course, they're crawling all over you. But we would still kind of, you know, let them know this is mommy daddy time. And when I was on a business trip, what she would do is I would call on the phone in the evening. She'd say, oh, it's mommy daddy time. And she'd put a picture of me there. And now you can do with FaceTime or Skype or whatever, you can do that on your iPads or your, but you can, you can actually put the iPad down there and they can see that I'm talking to
mommy.
But
this is a good principle for your children to know that, you know, you're not a child-centered home. You know, because it's always about them with all their needs and everything, but they need to see what a healthy marriage is like. What's a good mommy and daddy relationship like? If they see you, you know, showing them, teaching them what it's like, they'll now know why they want to get married someday, because mommy and daddy had a good relationship. And it brings security into their hearts, because so many kids today don't know if mommy and daddies are going to even come home. You know, and so their world is just turned upside down. But if mommy and daddy are good and they love each other, they're going to be secure and they're going to be good.
And we would see it all the time. If I would go on a trip for 3 days and they never saw me, the kids would start to act up. I mean, it was like clockwork. And what usually happened, and we called it the 3-day rule. It would always take me, when I got home, it would take 3 days for the kids to kind of, there'd be this sense of routine and organization and peace you'd see come over the kids, even as little infants, that they would, it's a little bit of a training, but they would get that, okay, mommy and dad are okay, we feel good. And we'd see it in a lot of our friends, that relationships where it was just all about the kids, and they never went on dates, they never touched each other, and they did that. The kids were really insecure, the kids would act up a lot, and as they got older, it gets magnified. It's when they're small, you don't see it as much, but as they get older, we've just, what, several people we've seen just...
Kind of goes opposite of what you might think. You're thinking you're building security in your kids by being there all the time. But when you do leave, then they're like, I can't function on my own. So you need to start teaching them that interdependence, you know, that mommy is here, this is good, that mommy and daddy are good, and I'm okay by myself.
Because I would always say, you know, I would be like, look, you guys are going to be gone someday, but mommy and daddy, we're always going to be together, right? You're just here for a short period of time. And my goal as a father was to get them from the day they came out and I cut the cord, was to get them from dependence on us to when they grow up to be dependent on Christ, right? And there's a continuum where we want to continue to teach them to be less dependent on us and more dependent on Him, so that when we die, they're submitting to Christ. And that doesn't happen, you know, 18 years before they go to college is like a blur. It just happens overnight. If you haven't already seen how quickly it's going, it goes faster every year. And when your kids hit junior high, then all of a sudden you're doing the SATs and they're applying to college. I mean, that's a blur. From junior high on, it's like you can count how many more Christmases you're going to have with them, right? It's going to be like 4 to 6 Christmases, and you make those things all of a sudden become meaningful, right? So really important that your relationship is so directly related to the security of your kids, because it conveys who Christ is in the husband-wife relationship, right? The church being the bride of Christ, husband and wife being that same example, they see that security. They're going to be attracted to who Jesus Christ is because of the love and the security that you have in your own relationship. So there's a whole other, you can talk about a whole another million set of things. If you have double income families, that creates challenges with support, right? With nannies or in-laws, you got to make the priority for you somehow, because if you're both working, then that becomes even a bigger challenge, because then they're going to see the proxy, you know, in-laws or grandparents as the parents, and then there's a whole other set of issues you got to deal with there. Pray for each other and with one another. That sounds very simple, but we get so busy in our lives now, and I think it gets real easy to make prayer kind of the only thing that happens at the dinner table and maybe before you send them off to some real crucial event. But with your spouse, spending time in prayer together. Gene and I don't have like a set time that we pray together every day, but for a lot of time share things, and then I'll take the lead and spontaneously say, let's just pray about that. Sometimes she doesn't want to pray and I'll do the praying. Sometimes I can't pray and she'll do the praying. But praying together is really important.
But don't underestimate prayer. You know, a lot of times we kind of tack it on to the end of something, or you know, you want to help and serve somebody. You say, what can I do? Well, I guess I could pray. Oh my. Don't ever say that. When I've seen what God has done in our marriage, it's all because of prayer. So it's pretty powerful.
Number 9, touch each other regularly. So I think this is another one that kind of begins to deteriorate the longer we're married, is that when you first get married, you know, you're intimate, you might be intimate daily, and then you remember that first week where, oh no, we didn't make love one night, and then once a week, and then we went on a cruise, and they talk, how often do you have sex? And they're like, sex, remember that one couple, like, oh, 5 times a week, and they were really old. And we were like, we're in trouble. So, it's about affection, because it doesn't have to be like PDAs, like you're at church and get a room type stuff, right? But it's the little things that, you know, like, you know, I'll caress Gina's hair, or, you know, touch her. It's letting her know, I don't have to say a word, but it's just little things. Holding hands with her when we're walking, like when we walk Tate to school in the mornings, we'll hold hands. Again, both of you can initiate that, but it's just the little things, right? I mean, because I think as you get involved with the busyness of life, you can even go to bed and just not even kiss each other goodnight. You can just crawl in and be on one. You've got a king size bed because we've done it. She goes to that side. Don't touch me. I like my bed side hot. You like your side cold. So don't don't mess up my side of the bed. And so it's just the little things, knowing what she's going to appreciate, right? Like I'll just get in bed and touch my toe against her toe, and usually mine are really cold. But she'll like, ah, but it's okay.
It's not okay.
But it's real important to do that. And it leads to the next one we said. This one I think came from Jim Dobson, but lovemaking starts in the kitchen. And by that it just means that for the men, it's just we learned this when we were growing up. You know, women's are like irons and men are like light switches. That always stuck with us. That, you know, a woman, when she warms up and gets romantic, it takes a while, but she, you know, she's hot for a while, right? A man, flip the switch on, turn them off. And so men really have to understand that, and they have to, you know, it starts in the morning, you know, where I come up and I might kiss her on the cheek, I might give her a hug in the morning. And that process needs to be something that goes throughout the day. This is a tough one because I don't know how you go back and tell this to your husbands, right?
Well, for the women, it goes the same way. I mean, we know we're irons, so we know it's going to take a long time. So start primping when you wake up in the morning, you know? Start thinking about it, planning. Okay, I guess I'll start kissing when he gets home. But if you're thinking about it all day long, then they won't have to work as hard.
Yeah.
But no, seriously, I mean, that's just something that we just have to do. Remember, that's who we are. Don't wait till they get home and go, oh, yeah, we were going to be intimate tonight. Then it's like it's too late, you know. That's not too late, but you know what I mean? It takes a little bit more work. So start in the morning. And when the thing about the kitchen for me, maybe I don't know if your husbands are like this, but I love to please him with a great meal. And where he's surprised. So for me, the kitchen, I start there. I think about that. I think about what I'm going to make him. If you're home alone, your kids are out, you can really start it in the kitchen. You know, just put your apron on. Do whatever you need to do, girls. But get it. Baby, get
and
it
that's started. A great date, too. If you can get someone to take the kids and just cook a meal. You know, because when you're just having the kids, you know, do waffles in the morning, you're doing all this, it's just cooking sounds like a pain. But if you can have a kid-free house, right, kid-free zone, and do a special meal, that's romantic, I think. That you it's not about how fast can you cook the meal and eat it and go to the next thing, but you make it maybe a long experience, right? And it's great if the husband can do that for the wife. So, anyways, I had to comment on that. Do not go to bed angry, Ephesians 4:26. Talks about don't let the sun go down on your anger. You know, this is where you may not be able to resolve all the issues that evening, but you can table that discussion. You know, it's where if you haven't brought it, said, look, it's I don't know that I'm perfect, but I'll say I'm not mad at you. I'm frustrated about this. I'm really fuming. I do love you. But I know we're not going to resolve this all tonight. So it's kind of like reassuring her that she's not the one I'm totally upset at. Or if I am upset, I said, I am upset with the way that was handled, but I don't want to go to bed tonight, you know, with that. So I know it's 11:30 at night, and we probably won't sleep anyways because we're... But it's kind of validating that I'm not separating from her, right? I'm not throwing her under the bus in the house, so to speak, and then running away. The biggest thing in kind of fair fighting is not running away from your spouse in that situation, but you're staying engaged, you're saying, I love you, you're communicating those thoughts, even though you can't maybe unwind all the emotions in that evening. So don't
go to bed. That's huge. That's huge if one person can just make that one thing. Because then we have been really upset, and Greg will say that, and we'll fall asleep holding pinkies, you know? But that's pretty good when you're like, we're not resolving this.
Yeah.
But that love and that commitment is still there.
Yeah. So I think I got like, 4 minutes or something? So I'll just, we might get through them all. Share and study and share the Bible with each other. Deuteronomy 6, 4 and 9 talks about, you know, that you... They post the things of God's word all over the frontals and the doorposts, things like that. We don't sit down and have like a formal study. She's usually in a women's study and I'm doing something on my own. We have separate study times. But what is very common is I'll say, hey, this is something I read in today when I read had my quiet time. And I'll sit down while she's cooking and I'll just read about it. Like the other day was Matthew chapter 17 about the transfiguration, and it impressed me that, you know, Peter says, "Oh, let me build three tabernacles and let's hang out here." And I said, "Oh, it's really cool that, you know, the presence of Christ should so impress us that we just want to be with him all the time, right? That it's going to be something we long for when we go to heaven." And it was just this conversation that we had. So that was fun. 14, ask your spouse key annual questions or assessments. So I can't really go into this too much, but you should be doing a kind of annual inventory, just, you know, asking your spouse questions like, what do you think is going right in our relationship? Where would you like our relationship to be this time next year? Will you please marry me all over again? I'd love to hear about your dreams for the future. Is there anywhere you'd like to visit this coming year? Do you think we're doing okay financially? How are you doing health-wise? If you could change one thing about our priorities as a family, what would it be? Is there anything I devote regular time to that you see as a possible threat to our family or our relationship? And lastly, are you happy in our relationship? You know, so it's good sometimes if you get to that, you know, December 31st, and you just have a conversation. And it doesn't have to be that you write a whole bunch of new goals for the year, but you kind of, you know, level set each other and see how are things going and ask those questions. 15, address conflict issues in non-conflict times. When the emotions are running high with both of you, it's, you know, you may just have to, like, table some of those things. You don't solve a lot of good things in the heat of the battle when you're in a fight. When the emotions calm down, it's good to talk about fair fighting rules. It's good to talk about how you're going to handle things when the emotions are at normal levels. And last is take vacations together. Even just, again, if it's something you do at home. You don't have to spend a lot of money, but today and tomorrow I took vacation days. I told all my reps and all my bosses that I am off the grid, you can't reach me. I turned my emails off on my phone so I'm not getting beeped, and my reps, if they call me, I'll ignore their calls because Gina then knows that I'm just getting time with her. And so it communicates to her she's important on vacation, and today with technology, you can be on vacation and you can still be working. And I just think it's so insulting to her when I'm having a conversation and then I'm on my iPhone. Yeah, babe, I hear you. I mean, I hate when guys do that to me at work. I'll be talking to them and they might decide to take notes on their iPhone or their iPad, and they'll just start doing this. Like, what are you doing? Well, I'm taking notes. Well, tell me you're taking notes. But it's so rude. And so it's the ultimate in rudeness to her is if I'm not looking at her, giving her full attention, and I'm doing this. And you go out to eat, and you're both on your phones. It's almost like it's a no-phone zone when you go on dates, or you go on vacations, and at least set up what those expectations are, because technology can be extremely frustrating and very severing to having a healthy marriage. So those are all of our, those were our 16 things that we wrote down. We got through them. So with a minute to spare, I guess. So... anyway,
that's it.
I don't know if you.
Thank you. Know what to do, do you have any questions or?